everyone, and thanks for listening and watching the Italian-American Entertainment Podcast. And I'm your host, Vince Shirelli. And today we have the very talented singer, songwriter, and founding member of the band The Buckinghams, Carl Gemmarisi. The Buckinghams are an American pop band from Chicago, Illinois, and formed in 1966, the band had gone on to become recognized as the most listened to band in America by Billboard magazine and charting 5 top 40 hits. And after over a half a century, Carl and the group still continue to delight audiences around the country. And so welcome, Carl. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm honored to, you know, to be a part of this, anything to do with Italian Americans. You know, I'm very proud of my heritage. So it's great to be here.
Me too. And yeah, very honored to talk to you and being a musician. And
say buongiorno.
Buongiorno. Yeah, that's right. But as a musician myself too, and I'm a big fan of 60s music, so this is going to be fun for me too to talk to you. So I love this stuff. But as most of our listeners know, and I usually start this with the first question being, since this is about Italians, where are you located now? But where in Italy do you trace your Italian ancestry?
Well, to begin with, I'm living in the Chicago area. I grew up in Chicago, and I'm now in the western suburbs, just outside of the city. But, I grew up on the north side of the city my whole life. And I've had times during my career when I've spent a lot of time in New York and in L.A. And, of course, we've traveled extensively and touring and so forth, you know. But Chicago's always been my home. I'm actually Sicilian. You know, I'm 100% Sicilian, actually.
Same here.
my folks, well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Always good to talk to another Siciliano.
Siciliano, that's right, yep.
my folks are, were born here. You know, my grandparents were born in Sicily. And my dad's parents were from a small town near Palermo called Bagheria.
Okay, sure.
And my mother, I think it's called Cimina or Cimina.
Oh, yep, I've heard of that. Cimina, yep.
Yeah, is where she's from, you know. And, this year we had, my wife and I had planned to make a trip out of Sicily, you know, go south, because in 2018 we went to, we had a vacation in Italy, but it was north and up in just past Siena and in northern Italy, it was a great experience. And I wish I was more fluent in speaking Italian. You know, my parents spoke fluently.
Okay.
Both the upper Italian, and then the Sicilian is a little more different. It's a little different.
Right. Yeah.
There's a thing to it. And of course, my grandmother could read and write in Italian. And when I was a little kid and she lived with us, and my great-grandmother too lived in the same apartment building, they used to sit and talk, and my great-grandmother would get letters from Sicily and she would read them to her. Mm-hmm. She could read and write in Italian and so forth. And but I didn't, unfortunately, my parents didn't, push it and speak it. I was starting to get a little, learning a little bit, getting better at it before I went on my Italian vacation, but I've kind of lost it now. So I know certain things and certain lines that I can understand a little bit.
Sure.
But, where are you located, if I may ask? Where are you?
Well, we're close. So I'm in Rockford. I'm sure you know where Rockford is.
Yeah, yeah, I have Gemmarisi's, the Gemmarisi name.
I'm related to him. So I, somehow my cousins are Gemmarisi's, so out here in Rockford. So I don't know somewhere in that connection where if you're related to the Rockford Gemmarisi's, but if so, there's some connection there somewhere.
Well, you know what? If your name last name is Gemmarisi, you must be somehow related. I think,
Yeah, exactly. But so being in Rockford. Jones. Yeah, exactly. But being in Rockford, of course, the Buckinghams have so many fans out here because, if you're from Rockford and you travel the country and someone asks you where you're from, most people just say Chicago because a lot of people don't know where Rockford is. So
yeah,
that's what Rockfordians say out here. But before we get into the Buckinghams and that great history with that band, how did your Italian upbringing have a lot of influence in you on into getting into music and becoming a singer? Did you have any other, you know, did your father, grandparents, anyone, you know, a lot of Sicilians, you know, there was nothing else to do back then other than work in the fields and play music. So did you have the music gene come over from, you know, Sicily?
Well, you know, I think I got the gene from my father. You know, my father was, and he was always singing and performing. And, you know, before World War II, he was an entertainer as a singer, and he played at certain clubs around Chicago. And then when he, you know, went overseas during the war, and he didn't come back for 4 years, he was over there. And he had a, you know, it was pretty rough about the first year, year and a half he was there. And he was recovering in a hospital. He had broken a leg on an accident driving a truck. And when he was laying in the hospital, he was singing a little bit to the nurses, you know, and one of them said, oh, you know, you should join special services and, you know, entertain the troops. Hmm. And so that gave him the idea, and he tried out for it, and he wound up with a band called the Continentals, and they traveled around, mostly around England at first, and entertained the troops. And then he hooked up with the Glenn Miller Orchestra, and he sang with Glenn Miller too. And Glenn Miller always said to him, you know, when the war's over, you know, come see me in New York. Of course, Glenn Miller never made it back, you know.
Right.
But he came back from the war, and he got away from it, really. But music was always a big part of his life. And I grew up listening to his favorite music and the big bands when I was a little kid, you know. And we always had music going on around the house. And, you know, I remember, like, my favorite song when I was a young kid was That's Amore.
Which, yeah.
When the moon hits your eye like a pizza pie. You know, that was like,
oh, yeah.
Had to be Dean Martin's version.
Exactly.
You know, it'd be anybody else. It had to be Dean Martin, you know. And so I was always, you know, hearing music. And but, you know, they didn't push it on me or anything, you know. And I lived in kind of a rough, it wasn't an Italian neighborhood. My parents grew up on the near north side of the city in a very Italian neighborhood. But I grew up in Uptown, and it was a pretty tough neighborhood at the time when I was about 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And they suggested me playing a musical instrument, and it wound up being a guitar. And, you know, at first I was interested in playing a sax, but my mother, who was a big fan of Elvis, so no, you gotta play the guitar, and you could sing and play, you know. So I started taking lessons when I was 13 years old, and they found a guitar teacher for me, and I think they mainly wanted it to be a diversion just to keep me out of trouble, you know.
Right.
But it caught on, and I just embraced it and kept playing on the guitar, you know, until my high school. Early in high school, I wound up joining a band, you know, a band eventually, and that sort of did it. And of course, I'm jumping ahead here, but by 64, you know, the Beatles changed everything for us. And, you know, we all wanted to be the fifth Beatle, you know.
All right, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, that's how it kind of began.
So, did you have a you know, listening to that music with your father, was there a specific, you know, you already mentioned Dean Martin, of course, and, you know, Dean and Frank and, you know, all those guys, you know, influenced so many people. But was there, did you have a big Italian-American musical influence when you were, you know, in a teenager and getting into the music scene?
Are you talking about from our genre of music during my time?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I didn't, you know, I was listening to pop music, and of course, you know, I liked Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, which, you know, I've known Frankie for many years, and, you know, that was a group, and Louis Prima, you know.
Sure.
real Italian.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, and of course the Rat Pack, and you know, I was a big fan of Perry Como.
You know, really?
Italian. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah.
And I just loved the sound of his voice, and but of course, you know, once I got into the pop music, the rock music, I mean, it all changed. And then I was listening to you know, the Beatles, and every you know, the British Invasion was happening, you know, by 64, and that's got caught up in that whole thing, you know.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's you know, last year I'm also a music promoter, you know, not this year unfortunately because of COVID, right. But I bring some shows to Rockford, and last year I was able to get Peter Asher out here, and that was great being able to talk to him because he was right in the midst of all that 1964 British invasion. So
his background and especially his relationship to Paul McCartney, and you know, Paul was dating his
his sister. Yeah. Yeah. No, there's some great stories back then. So, you know, one very interesting thing about you is how young were you then in 66? You were still in high school?
Yeah. Well, that was 66 was my senior year.
Senior year. So
I was, I think I was going to be 18, you know?
Okay. So, I mean, I'm a musician, you know, at that age, everybody's dream is to, you know, have a number one hit or number one record. And you were, you know, lucky enough to be able to have that. You know, you had many top hits, and, you know, you were especially able to achieve that when, you know, Kind of a Drag became a giant hit. So what was it like for you, you know, at 18 years old, still just not even in college, to have, you know, a number one song in the nation?
It was incredible because I was still in high school when, you know, senior in high school when Kind of a Drag hit and started taking off, you know, and it was a little intimidating and scary because up until then we were a local band just playing, you know, the teen clubs and teen dances mostly around Chicago, and we would travel out a little bit and play you know, the tri-state area and so forth, and we'd come back and forth, you know, with not that much. And then, you know, we kept trying to get a hit, and then finally, our manager, Carl Bonifetti, another Paisan, managed to, get an original song from somebody, this singer songwriter who played in another band. His name was Jim Holvey, and Jim gave us Kind of a Drag. And, we thought it was a catchy tune. We really liked it. You know, we rehearsed it, and, you know, I mentioned before we used to rehearse in our parents' basement. We weren't really a garage band. We were a basement band. We would rehearse in one of our parents' basements, you know, for a while until they got sick and tired of hearing us, you know, time to move on to the next guy's house, you know,
right.
but we were rehearsing in my parents' basement. It was Kind of a Drag. And I remember my mother coming down and saying, you know, that's a catchy tune, man. I could do it for you. Something good could happen. So, you know, we had a record deal with USA Records. I'm sort of getting ahead of myself, but we got a deal after doing this TV show, All Time Hits on WGN for 13 weeks. And the exposure from that got us a record deal with USA Records. And we were a cover band at the time, the Buckinghams. We started out as the Pulsations was the name of the group. And then when we got the TV show, they didn't like that name. They wanted to capitalize on the British invasion. So
right.
It became the Buckinghams. And so we did this show for 13 weeks and got the record deal and started recording at the old Chess Studios on South Michigan Avenue. And did a bunch of sides, and they released them. They were cover tunes, you know, because that's all we knew at the time. So then when Kind of a Drag came along, when Jim gave us that song and we recorded it and they finally released it, it just took off overnight, you know.
Wow.
And it was a little intimidating. It was crazy because all of a sudden we're in the national spotlight and we're getting offers to perform all over the country, and including the TV shows started coming in, and you know, we were in a very strange position because that was our last song under contract to USA Records. Okay. And here we were with the number one record in the country, and we didn't have a record deal. So wow. It's actually a good position to be in, because you can call the shots, and everybody wanted to sign us, you know.
Sure. So, I mean, something interesting to me, my grandfather was a Italian musician. He owned a record label out here in Rockford, too. And I want to ask you before I forget, too, since, of course, you're a Chicago guy, did you ever run across the name or have any dealings with a guy named Bud Brandom out of Chicago? He was a publisher. He did a lot of publishing back in the day. He actually owned the song Pretend and Night Train. So those were his two big songs that were in his catalog. But I don't know. I just thought I'd bring up the name. He actually was Italian, even though Bud Brandom doesn't sound Italian.
A lot of Italians, change their name just to sound more American or simplify it, you know.
Sure.
Remember, I'm jumping ahead just to tell you this. So after the Buckinghams, and I had a duo, with another original Buckingham, Dennis Tufano. So
sure.
We became Tufano and Giammarisi, which is cool. And we started recording, but originally I was talking about shortening my name for the group or using another name. My father had a fit. I mean, he just blew up at me. He says, "No, you're Italian, be proud."
Yeah, exactly.
That didn't work out. So I stayed with even the two M's, which is common for, Italian names. So.
Exactly.
But anyway, what were you asking me?
Outside of Bud Brandom, the one thing, when I would sit with my grandfather and he would tell me, the heydays of the late 50s and early 60s, and this was the time when he was, really big into the music industry and had his record label. I'll never forget, he was a tailor. His day job was a tailor and the side was music. And he sat me down and he always said, if you want to be, I was about 16, 17, still in high school. He said, if you want to do music, that's great, but always have, your insurance policy for your life, which is get a career. And that was a very Italian thing, to say. And, growing up with my dad.
Now you're 19 or 20?
No, I'm 30 now. But did you, when you hit it and you were in high school, did you ever have the sit down with, the Italian family and them saying, did you ever get some pushback from them saying, you really got to get a real job? Or were they very supportive from the beginning?
My dad, not more than my mom. She was a little more easygoing. But my dad would say that all the time, but you got to have something to fall back on, you need to have another, and it just in case, and I kept saying, but Dad, this is what I'm going to do my whole life. Maybe I won't make a lot of money doing it, but I'll always make a living from it. I know I can, thank God my whole life, I've never really done anything else. And music's been my whole life. I've always been able to make a living from making music, and I'm very grateful for that, I'll tell you. But he used to bring that up. I mean, even after we had, our third top 10 record, you might want to think about, in case, something else. I said, Dad, this is it. I mean, I'm not going anywhere else. This is what I'm going to do. Because when I went to Lane Tech High School and with aspirations of being either an architect or mainly an automotive designer. I loved cars. And I certainly had enough of them, but I loved designing, the thought of designing automobiles, cars. And I thought maybe that's what I would do, but then I got totally sidetracked with music. And, I know my dad was proud of me and everything, but he's a worrier. He was worried that, I needed to have something else there that, and I think that's typical of Italians. My partner in the Buckinghams, Nick Fortuna, Nick is 100% Sicilian also. And his dad, I remember him saying to me the same thing, that he wanted Nick to be able to, fall back on something. And Nick was a hairdresser too. He did learn how to do that, and he was very good at it. He was very good at it, And he would go back and forth. And I remember in the Buckinghams in the 60, 67, 68, if you look at us, our hair all looks similar because he used to cut our hair.
Interesting.
He was the guy that he was good at it, but he was cutting everybody's hair, and you know, but he, you know, he went through the same thing. You know, it's like it must be an Italian thing. Every parent, I guess, is worried. You know.
Exactly. You know, so you know, after all these years, and you guys are still going. You know, it's actually, are you guys do the Happy Together tour, correct? With the Turtles and a couple of other groups.
Yeah.
So yeah. I was, actually looking into that to bring you guys to Rockford this year, which unfortunately, you know, maybe next year or the year after we can do something, but you know, you've been touring basically since you were, you know, in high school. With my band, we're an Italian band. We play, at Italian festivals around the country. So we don't play, you know, every night of the week, but we'll travel during the summer and go different states. And, you know, touring life for people, looking on the outside, you know, they think it's very glamorous and all this and that. And, you know, it really isn't. It's a lot of hurry up and wait. And, so after all these years, one thing I like asking other musicians, you know, there's kind of a couple ways to go in the music business where, you know, you're a stage group and you're performing every night and, you know, big stages and all that, and you're touring, or, you know, you can never be known, really. You can write a bunch of hits and make all the money on copyrights and be a great songwriter or music producer, and you're really not the face. And I've always wondered, do you love the touring life still today after all these years, or do you ever think if you would have taken the music direction, you know, music business in a different direction, you know, more on the sidelines where, you know, maybe a bigger producing role or more of a songwriter and not in the limelight, or do you just love the, you know, the stage and the fans and you just keep you going?
Well, you know, I love the stage, to a degree, and I love the fan. We have such great fans, you know, and they're so supportive, and I like getting up there and performing. And I still do after all these years, but you know, I don't look at myself as a natural performer. I don't, you know, I don't think I have exceptional, stage presence. You know, it's I feel comfortable up there. And I think the audience feels that when we're performing, because, the one thing I've learned after all these years, you can't fool the audience. You know, if you're not having a good time, they know it. You know, they can feel it, and I have a good time up there and I enjoy it. But I think being in the studio and recording, making music in the studio, is my first ambition as far as what I really truly enjoy doing. You know, I love making music. I've been, you know, this pandemic has changed everything. You know, of course, last year we were on a Happy Together tour, and it was a long tour and it was grueling, and that's a tough one. That's, you know, it's not easy. That tour is not easy. You're doing one-nighters and you're traveling, you know, hundreds of miles every day. And if you do have a day off, it's usually because you got 500 miles to get to the next place.
Right.
And we, you know, and at the level we're at, you have to understand, we're a national group. We've had our hits. We've got national notoriety, but we're not like, Elton John on tour here,
sure.
You know, we're at that level, and we're more accessible to the fans. So, you know, people stop and talk, and it takes patience sometimes. But you know, I enjoy talking to people and meeting people. You know, after shows, that's the fun time for me, is the meet and greets afterwards, because I love to have people come up to me and say, you know, when this song was out, when you guys recorded Kind of a Drag, I just broke up with my girlfriend, but we got back together eventually. And you know, it's a good feeling to know that you're part of their life, and that's great. But I would say I enjoy, since this pandemic, I've spent a lot of time in the studio. Now I'm writing songs, I'm been learning a new kind of recording system. I've done some projects for different people. You know, for 8 months now, there's an old friend of mine, who used to live in my neighborhood, but he lives in Palm Springs now, and I won't get into the details, but he's an older gentleman. I think he's 84 years old, and he's been writing all these songs for years, and they're quirky, kind of country-ish and cool lyrics, and he sings them, and he you know, and he asked me to help him out. He wanted to record. So for 8 months, we did a whole album together, and we've done, started another project. And I got into it with just kind of like helping him out. And for 8 months now, I've enjoyed myself doing this. It's been one of my projects along with doing my own stuff, keeping busy. And when we can finally go back to performing again, yeah, I'll probably embrace that. But to tell you the truth, I haven't missed it as much as I thought I would, you know. Right. And maybe because I know eventually this thing's going to end, and God willing, everybody's going to be okay, and we're going to get back to normal again. Right. I hope so. You know, I pray for that every day when I see the suffering and what people are going through. Yeah, it's tough, you know, it's tough to see that. It's hard for me to even talk about, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, no, it's very unfortunate. And, you know, we're in the same state too. So you're going through the same things, you know, we're only, yeah. What, 50 miles, 60 miles away from each other. So yeah, it's hard
for me to talk about without tearing
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
But, you know, we go on, you know, people are resilient, and we're strong, and we'll get through this, you know. The Buckinghams right now, we have our schedule, looks like it's, providing everything, the vaccine thing happens real well. And, but we've got dates starting in August.
Okay.
You know, August and September, some October, you know, they even have some of the dates we had this year moved to, 22.
Yeah. That's happening to us too. We play mostly Italian festivals. So, you know, hopefully, you know, June, July, August is when it starts.
You know, in Rockford.
Oh, have you?
Oh, yeah. It's been years. It's been years now. But we have been there, you know. And that's one of, you know, going back to the Italian thing, you know, our Italian, the Taylor Street area in Chicago, sure. Which is, you know, major. And one of my dear paisans, Ron Onesti.
Oh, sure. Good friend of mine, too.
Yeah, well. Is anybody that's not he knows everybody.
He Boy, does.
He's a guy, I mean, he's
he is
so giving and so outgoing, and of course the Arcata Theater is his venue, and he's had us there both on our own, the Buckinghams, and played with mainly the Cornerstones of Rock show.
Oh, sure.
Done there. Usually get there about three times a year. We've had that date changed three times this
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure when, you know, he said it's a possibility that there could be a Valentine's Day show, but I don't know. That's in February. But he's been very supportive, you know. And, you know, we did a show not too long ago at the Arcata before the pandemic with Danny Serafin, who's
oh,
the
sure.
original drummer in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he brought us in for that show. And so that's, you know, so we're, you know, we're just taking it a day at a time and hoping, you know, I hope everybody can, I've been doing song videos. I've probably done 30 songs now, just me and my guitar, just singing a Buckingham song, one of my favorites, you know, and so those are out there on YouTube. And
I've seen some of those. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That's,
you know, they're pretty raw, and just, you know, turn on the iPhone and play into it, and, you know, and
people like nothing. That though. People, I think, yeah. I think fans like to see, you know, a little more stripped down versions of things. I think they really enjoy that.
It's fun to talk to people a little bit too. I usually do that before I start a song, and that's been okay. So I'm, you know, life is good mostly. I mean, it's.
That's good.
I look forward to when we can get out and play again for everybody.
Me too. I hope it's sooner than later. And
yeah.
So what advice would you have? You know, I'm 30 years old. I started performing very young too. And what advice would you have to someone my age or even younger, or really anybody that's really trying to follow in like your footsteps, that really wants to have, you know, well, the musician's life?
Yeah. Are you a musician? Do you play guitar? Do you play?
I'm the guitarist and lead singer. Yep.
Yeah. What group is that?
It's just my name, the Vince Shirelli Band. We play my grandfather's music and Italian music. We actually.
Really?
Yeah. So it's called Flamenco Italiano is my genre. We mesh flamenco music with Italian. So very more upbeat Latin Italian stuff.
Do you have music recorded?
Yeah, we have 4 CDs, and I'll share some stuff with you. Yeah,
I should know this. I'm embarrassed now.
Oh no, it's okay. I'm a nobody. It's okay. I'm just from Rockford, so.
Don't ever say that. Nobody's a nobody.
No, I know. But so what would your big advice be to someone that really wants to follow, you know, in the music footsteps? Well,
first of all, it is so different now than it was when I started out trying to get started. And, you know, we didn't have, I mean, it's sort of come around in a circle now, live performing, which we can't do right now. The pandemic aside, live performing is still the best way to get your name out, I think.
Get
known is to, you know, if you've got a way of playing a lot of good venues, if you have an agent or something that can get you out and get the exposure, that's great. The problem I see today is, first of all, to be in this business, you've got to be so dedicated and so focused. And to be successful and nothing else deters you away from making your music. I mean, that's, you know, I have missed so many things in my life, you know, because of music. I've missed, you know, weddings. I've missed dear relatives' funerals. I've missed Christmases. Being on the road and you don't have a normal life because you're traveling and that's, you know, part of it. So to make it to begin with, you've got to be so focused and, you know, put 110% into it, you know, in order to make it. But then you look at what's going on now, you know, back in the day when I started, there definitely wasn't as many bands around and groups, even though it seemed like they were starting up one after another. But still, we had a lot of venues to play. There were so many dances and teen clubs and parties and different, you know, that I don't see that as much today, being able to get yourself out there. And then we used to be able to attract record companies. You know, there was always a record label that you could, you know, because back in the day, there were a lot of labels. And if you were an artist that could sell, say, 150,000 units, even 80,000 units, you'd get a record deal. That was considered good. Not anymore. No. You know, you gotta, and I can't even begin to tell you how to figure out your streaming royalties.
Yeah, no,
it is, and it's so minute, you know, and the labels aren't around, and that's the problem. You can't get the promotion, and you better be a genius at working social media.
Exactly.
You know? You know, I have a couple friends, two young ladies. Check them out, Carly and Martina.
Okay.
And they're young. They're probably 18 years old now. They're twins. And they've been making music and producing their own music, and they really know how to work the social media and do the whole. And they are really good, very talented. But will they make it? I don't know. It's so hard. So when you ask me for advice, I don't even know what to tell somebody other than, you know, I will say that more than likely, if you have a special talent or something really special to offer, it's going to come out. Somebody's going to recognize it.
Right.
And it takes, just like in the old days, it takes one big break, really, you know, one big break could change everything, you know.
Right.
Your songs, your recordings can go viral and it's, you know, attracts a lot of attention. And before you know it, you're on an award show or you have your music out there and everybody's, but I don't, you know, the record deals aren't there like they used to be, you know, that's
yeah. Labels are a thing of the past. Like I mentioned, my grandfather had a record label, so it's called Vincent Records, and I own it now. He gave it to me when he passed away, and so I own a record label. Does that mean anything? Not anymore. The only thing it means is I own all the copyrights from, you know, the 50s and 60s of all these groups in Rockford and the Chicago area. So, you know, really my goal is to...
You know, hold on to it. You know?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But, you know, the publishing and writing, that's something else I would recommend to any new artist. Or, you know, you get caught up in the excitement of performing and you get the attention. And with us, it was, you know, and you're meeting girls, you know, so you don't pay attention to the business part.
Right.
And we would be in a lot different, you know, I won't complain because I've done very well in the business all these years, but we would have been in a lot different position if we were smart enough to hang on to our publishing and writing. Somebody else is very wealthy now.
Exactly. My grandfather taught me that's amazing. I look back through some of the records, you know, people would sell their copyrights for a dollar or the publishing rights for a dollar. And, you know,
I'll give you an example. I shouldn't really divulge a lot of it, you know, because this is some of the private stuff. But, you know, our ex-manager and producer, James William Gersio, another Italian, Gersio, who went on to, after producing us and managing us, went on to produce the group Chicago. And I think he did about their first 10 albums or something. And he did the same thing as he did to us, took the publishing and writing. And I'm not saying he did anything illegal, but he was smart enough. He was so many steps ahead of us. We didn't know.
Exactly, yeah.
And so because of that, you know, he's a very, very wealthy man today, and he's done very well in business. And our original producer is a Chicago guy. His name is Dan Belloc, and Dan produced Kind of a Drag. And when you mentioned the song Pretend, mm-hmm. he had a recording of that was very successful. And I could swear that he had some of the publishing on that song. But he was a smart businessman. And,
yeah, the story behind the guy that owned Pretend, Bud Brandom, the story he told me, because he was very close with my grandfather, they were co-publishers on a lot, and he told me the story of Night Train. Night Train he bought for $25 off of a guy on the side of the street on Michigan Avenue that was playing, I think, the song on the saxophone, he told me. He went up to him and said, write down the music, I'll give you $25 right now for that song, and it was Night Train. And it's one of the, I'm sure you know Night Train. Most people know Night Train. So it's amazing what was going on in the music business back then. But, you know, it was business, and they knew the business a little better than other people. So it's interesting.
That's it. If you knew, and then our parents didn't know the business, really. They didn't know anything. So they couldn't advise us, really. We just didn't know. But the one thing I have younger people, you know, contact me many times to ask questions. You know, one of the first things I tell them is that, you know, if you've got some music, some song, whatever, or a recording that you're really feeling good about or whatever, make sure you copyright it.
Mm-hmm.
You Library of Congress, it's not that expensive to do it. No. You know, fill out the form, send them in, you know, so you have the rights to the song. So
that's right.
Rip you off, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then I've had other people ask me, well, you know, this record label or these people were interested in me and my song, you know, and what do you think? You know what? Could you look at my contract? Or they gave me, you know, and I have looked at a few, and I'm not a lawyer,
right.
But I see red flags right away.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I always tell them, it's not that expensive. Get a hold of a good music lawyer.
Yeah.
Music attorney. You know, have them review it. They'll, you know, they can do it fairly quickly, and they could tell you, no, you don't want to do this or change that, or, you know, this is not a good deal. But don't just sign your name to something. You know, if you think you got something special happening, you know, don't, because that'll screw it up. You'll regret that.
Oh yeah. No, the rest of your life, you know, for.
Yeah. Look at John Mellencamp, you know.
Oh, sure.
He was John Cougar, you know, he got screwed out of all this stuff. And even Taylor Swift, you know, she changed her whole deal. You know,
it happens to, you know, the best of us. it gets everybody. So you just gotta be, up on your game, and you gotta get good people behind you. But,
publishing is, I mean, there's a lot of money. Look at the deal that Bob Dylan just sold his, all his stuff, you know, for like,
it's crazy.
Anyway.
Crazy stuff. So before we get to the end here, one thing I ask all the people that come on this show, comedians, you know, musicians like yourself, is about us Italian Americans. So What is your hope for the future of Italian-American entertainment? And do you have a good feeling that there's others, you know, my age or even younger? You know, I'm 30. You know, is there upcoming Italian-Americans that are trying to continue the culture within the music business or any type of entertainment industry?
Well, are you asking me about Italian Americans in the music business in general? Just
sure. Yeah, we can stick to the music business. Yeah. So, do you have a good feeling that, you know, like when you were growing up, and you know, 50s and 60s, and you know, there was so many Italian Americans. You can name more than your fingers. You know, everybody with, you know, like you said, Perry Como, Sinatra, all these guys. You know, nowadays, when you try to specifically think of an Italian American, you know, in the entertainment music business, it gets a little tougher. They're out there. So, but do you have a good feeling that, you know, more of my questions coming from the cultural side. So do you think my age group, is going to keep this culture going in the entertainment business?
Well, I hate to sound negative, but I mean, it is so different now and it's been so diluted that I don't think that is going to, be like it was back in the day. You know,
right.
Italian Americans, you know, I truly believe that, we have a natural, and maybe I'm prejudiced here, a natural talent for having a voice, singers,
right.
You know, and there's a lot of great singers and that's still happening, but I don't see us, at this stage, at this time, you know, I don't think that the industry is embracing that. So I don't know if there's any advantage to being Italian. You know, I hate to be blunt about
sure,
it.
Sure, no, yeah.
But it's you know, I would hope so. I mean, you know, I mean, aren't we Italian? Aren't we the best looking team? The most talented?
Yeah.
No, I'm just... I don't know, you know, I mean, that's a rough question because, you know, I don't see an advantage to being Italian. It's something that I really embrace because, you know, being an Italian heritage I don't know if there's specifically enough of an Italian audience.
Right. You know, I think part of the problem comes down to, you know, the separation that's happened over the years. You know, like you said, your parents were born here, your grandparents, you know, were from the old country.
It's
so now if you
now it's been it was, you know, I went to see a concert, this was right before the pandemic hit. I think it was last January. I went to the Chicago Theater to see El Volo.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And they were fantastic.
Yeah. And they pack it. It's crazy.
It was kind of interesting because I sat in a group of people, a couple of people recognized me in the audience and we got to talking and then it sort of took off and pretty soon I had a group of people that were, you know, and I was sitting there signing some autographs, but the thing I noticed was, I mean, it wasn't like it was an Italian audience.
No, yeah.
You know, I'm sure there were some Italians out there just like me.
Mm-hmm.
But they were embraced and they really embraced their heritage too. They did a lot of different kinds of music within that show and a lot of it was sung in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's, they're exceptional talents. I don't know if it's an advantage anymore to be an Italian, to be in the business, you know.
Yeah, it's tough. I think the biggest thing is just the separation that's happened over the years. And like you said, it's become diluted.
Well,
yeah.
It's the support that you get. And I think that support from Italian Americans back in the day was stronger than it is today. You know,
yeah.
That's part of what's, you know, I mean, look, you know, I hate to get into politics or whatever, but look what's happening with them wanting to tear down monuments.
Oh, I know.
In Chicago or Italian, Columbus.
I know.
You know, I mean, my God, you know, I understand some of these Confederate monuments and what they stand for. And, you know, that was treasonous what happened back. But this is, you know, you're going back to for 1492.
I know, exactly.
What really happened? And you know, and that's crazy to throw that into there. And, which reminds me of Rino Nesti.
I know.
Part of resisting that whole thing.
Yeah.
I told him, I says, if I could do anything to help, you know, let me know. I mean, my father was a member of the Knights of Columbus, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the one thing, of course, it's probably this way with other cultures too, whether you're, say, Greek or, you know, or different Hispanic nationalities, you know, your parents instill in you, you know, your background and who you are and what, you know, my father, mother and father always did that. And they always talked about their Italian heritage and the family was everything, you know. And I hope that's still the same. I mean, it's different now. I mean, my parents have been gone for quite a few years and you kind of splinter off, but you try to keep it together. You know, I have a group of my Italian cousins. It's about 25 of us, 30 of us. We didn't do it this year because of COVID, but every year, a couple times a year, we get together. You know, we rent a facility at a restaurant or whatever, and there's like 25, 30 of us that cousins. It's the cousins party, you know. We all get together and, you know, and talk about
old times.
Because we were a very close-knit family. That's the thing about Italians.
Oh, know? Yeah, very close-knit. And it's unfortunate that that's changing over the years. You know, I remember when I was a little kid, every weekend it was a big party, and now it's like, it's unfortunate that you don't see each other than maybe once a year, Christmas, Thanksgiving.
I know. It was so many great memories of, you know, around Christmas time and, you know, I don't know, Fish Day was for us, it was usually the week before Christmas, you know, and that weekend or whatever it was before. And I mean, my God, you know, we used to, you know, I used to take my parents down to the Italian fish market, you know, a week before or something, and they would buy all this stuff that a lot of people won't eat.
Right.
Italian, you know, although my wife has changed a little bit now. She'll eat some of this, but, you know, we'd have, you know, squid and octopus.
I was going to say, do you have the octopus salad? That was the big thing with my they loved that octopus.
I couldn't believe how much we could eat. And then we'd have all that stuff. And then later Italian sausage, homemade sausage and beef sandwiches.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the thick, you know, not Lou Malnati's pizza.
No, the spingiuni, the thick pizza.
Sicilian, exactly. You know, and that, then my wife still makes that. You know,
Good. I love that.
Yeah. There was this, you know, you're bringing back so many memories. did you ever have the baked the meat inside the bread?
Imbriolati?
Scaccioni, you know, it was a Sicilian. But, you know, there are just so many things, you know, so many things that my mother used to make that, you know, that I took for granted. And,
and
now I miss them. And my wife, you know, I'm not complaining. My wife's an excellent cook, you know, makes wonderful dinners. But there are certain things that, you know.
I miss it too. I know. So before we end it, once again, I really appreciate you coming on. We could talk for hours about, you know, your life and the Buckinghams and all that. Before we end it, how do people find out, you know, more about you, your music? How do they see those videos you're doing right now? Just you and a guitar. And then I'll tag all these links on the end. But any way people can find you.
Well, you know, of course, we have our website is thebuckinghams.com.
Okay.
You know, Buckinghams, because I think if you just put buckinghams.com, some arts company comes up. www.thebuckinghams.com. And then we have our Facebook page. You know, I have Carl G. Marisi page, and of course, the Buckinghams. And we're always doing new stuff and putting stuff on there. And then, you know, I've been doing, you know, this lady that's been pushing me as a publicist, I think she contacted you, Dawn Lee Wakefield, pushes me to do these videos. So, you know, you can just, you know, Google my name or go up on YouTube and Google me, and you can see all those videos you're talking about, you know.
Okay. Yeah. And I'll tag everything on this too.
And the Buckinghams, you know, are usually what would be coming up now this time of the year is we'd be doing some Christmas shows, you know, because we have a Christmas album that's available on our website, The Joy of Christmas, which is a collection of original and traditional Christmas songs.
Okay.
And then I did an album a few, well, it's been a few years already that the last solo album I did, Living in the Moment, and original songs. So okay. That's available on the website, and it's on, you know, iTunes and various streaming and Spotify and different places, you know, all the usual
sure.
streaming sites and so forth. And that's about it. I mean,
okay.
I hope we get up and playing again real soon.
I know. And hopefully I can get you out here in Rockford. I know you've played at the Coronado before, because I think I saw that Cornerstones of Rock a few years ago. So
Yeah,
we'll have to get you back.
To see my G. Marisi family there, you know, B and all her family and different, they're up in Rockford.
Oh, so you are related to B then? I was going to ask.
Yeah.
I'm related to B on the other side. She's my second cousin. Crazy.
So, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so B...
gosh, it's her mom's husband,
yeah,
Marisi, my dad's cousin, you know, first cousin.
Crazy, too. Yeah. So B's mother was a Buscemi, I believe. Yeah, Buscemi family, and that was my grandfather's first cousin. That was all. Yeah, so we're crazy. So
we're related.
Small world.
World.
I'll have to tell B and Frank and all them that we talked.
Yeah,
so.
Please do. Tell them I'm looking forward to. Hey guys, I'm looking forward to seeing you soon. I hope you get out to Rockford.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, I'll have to tell them. But once again, I'll tag all your links on here so people can find out more about you, watch your videos, and listen to your music. And again, thank you very much for coming on. And great talking to you and about your Italian-American history and all that. So,
well, Vince, you know, you have a be safe, stay well, be careful out there. Have a wonderful holiday season.
You too. Yeah. Have a Merry Christmas. Yeah. Buon Natale.
And, you know, we'll get together. We'll definitely, once we get past this, we'll make it a point. Please stay in touch.
Will do. Yeah, I will. And once again, thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for listening and watching the Italian American Entertainment Podcast. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks. All the Buckingham fans out there. I appreciate your support, too. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. We'll talk next time. We'll see you next time, everybody.